This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's May the 18th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Ed Shirey. He's of the Andersons in Dunkirk, Indiana. Bruce Bostard is away today. In agricultural news, a rift is growing in Washington over how to fund the Conservation Security Program. That's known as the CSP. And an Iowa State study says food prices are up 3% nationwide because of the increased commodity prices. Oh, and a piece of legislation to prevent big oil companies from getting a tax break related to the use of vegetable oil is making its way through the Hill. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly, and then I'll take you through this week's edition of the University of Illinois Pest Management and Crop Development Bulletin. It all happens on this Friday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
At 2 o'clock Central Time this afternoon, USDA released its latest cattle on feed report for the month of May. The numbers look like this. The USDA estimate on feed as of May 1 at 90%, placed in April at 97, and marketed in April at 102. We'll take up those numbers in just a moment, but we'll take a look first at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade as they finished on this Friday afternoon. Futures in the soft red winter wheat July contract pit down 14 and a quarter today at 471 and a quarter. September at 484 and a quarter, down 14 cents. And December futures at $4.94.5 for the soft red, down 12 cents. July corn futures down a penny and three quarters at 371 and a quarter. September's 369, down 2.5. And December futures there down 4 cents at $3.66.5. July soybean futures 792.5, there down a quarter. August futures at 799 and a quarter, down a quarter. And November beans at $8.21 and a quarter, unchanged. Bean meal futures July contract 70 cents lower at $212 even. July bean oil at $35.15, up 16. And the feeder cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange at 22.5 cents lower, finished at 109.12.5 for the May contract. June live cattle 22.5 higher at 92.65. The August futures up 60 cents at $92.40 a hundredweight. Lean hogs, June contract $75.40, and they were down 22.5 cents for the afternoon. From the outside markets, July crude oil at $65.95 a barrel, down or rather up 3 cents for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 13,526, and it's up right at 50 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Friday afternoon to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange and those numbers from the USDA Cattle on Feed Report is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hello there, Todd.
What'd you make of the cattle on feed?
Well, pretty nice marketing number, you know, 102% against the average of 99.9 and the top end of 101.4. We had some fun buying on today's close. We should probably have some follow-through thanks to those marketing numbers, we think.
Anything we need to come up with on the livestock side beside going through the cattle on feed reports?
Only that the hog market saw some increased bids by the packers. I think they've started their runs up a full scale here again, so we might be looking at a little bit better prices for hogs, and that might spill over in the cattle pits as well next week, too.
Yeah, on the livestock side a little bit later, Dave Dickey will tell us in the news segment that Iowa State has a new study out, says that the price of food is up 3%, that because of higher commodity prices. Will that come back at some point, do you think, to burn farmers in the future?
No, I don't think so. We've been going through that report today, as a matter of fact, and I think it added up to be about $47 a year that each individual consumer is going to have to pay more at the grocery store this year. And, you know, that's $47 a year, and we're putting in about $47 a week more into our gas tank. So I think if you would take out the food and split the food and the energy out on the inflation side and kind of make the argument that we're trying to, yes, raise food prices by a real small amount to really take down your energy inflation by a large amount, that argument would fly.
Let's take a look at numbers as they finish from the Chicago Board of Trade. Boy, oh boy, you know, let's talk about the beans just a bit, because that chart, when you start taking a look at it, despite the fact on the week, because of the fact on the week, the thing was up, what, 42.5 cents? And then by July, that's lead option, so that's a May to a July change. But the Novembers were up 30.5 on the week. The beans look really good on the charts at this point.
They do, especially the weekly chart. I was just on the phone with Chicago before we got on the air, and we were talking about the bean charts, and it's amazing how different the weekly chart and the monthly charts look. We've got near 90% overbought conditions on the monthly chart, and it looks like it's really getting heavy and laid down and starting to lay down a little bit. And that some of the commercial buyers in the pits were telling the EFG guys that they were a little bit worried about beans being a little tired out after this bean oil run. But you look at that weekly chart, you're exactly right. You're right in the middle of the range on the stochastics, and you don't have a lot of resistance at all. July first resistance is 801.75. That's the April 2 high. Then you've got contract high resistance from February at 822. After that, you know, that being lead month, it's pretty much up and away as far as the charts go. So next week will probably be a real big week. Will the monthly chart win out, or will the weekly? So that'll be a biggie.
Go, baby, go. Will it be the weather that runs that?
Yeah, you know, we still feel like that the wheat and the corn, and today was a good example of it, we believe, that it tends to hold back the beans from the specs wanting to buy. But I have to say, we've had a lot of calls from folks in Tolono, Champaign, up towards Bloomington, up all the way towards Pontiac, saying that the newly planted beans are running into very dry conditions, and emergence is a big issue if we don't get those rains next week. So as friendly as we get the corn, if we miss rains from here on out, we have to stay just as friendly the beans from a weather front, but just because of how short we're already starting in terms of acreage. You know, until USDA gives us another 2 million acres of beans in a future report, which we think they will, we're going to be very respectful of the bean market because of these charts and because of what we're starting out as far as how dry we've put some of the stuff in the dirt.
Will it give a lift to the corn market that's been sagging just a bit?
That's a good question, because there has been bean corn spreading out there in the marketplace, and the traders especially seem like the short-term traders have been wanting to buy beans and sell corn. I threw the question out to our Chicago people, how would they cover that position if we missed a rain? You don't want to be short corn and long beans, do you? Especially after a 40-cent run in beans this week in lead month, and they came back with no real good answer, that some guys will stick it out, other guys probably will sell options to try and cover themselves up. But I guess my mindset is, and what we talked about around here this week, was you're not going to be long and short. You're going to have to dump out of your short corn position, and the spread in the corn kind of tells you that already, Todd, that you don't want to be short corn and long beans if you're in a weather scenario, especially after the beans have had this kind of a run-up. So
this is because it's a weather scenario and you want to be long both?
Yes, that's exactly right. You're going to rob Peter to pay Paul if you're short corn and long beans, especially with the way the stochastics look on the corn. The stochastics on corn look even better. The oscillators would suggest to the technical trader that there's even more new potential buyers coming in. And these past couple weeks, we've seen a lot more new sellers come into the corn, and they've gone to the long beans instead. So a reversal of that would make sense. And so at that point, you don't want to be short corn and long beans.
Yeah, come back and tell me just a bit about this spread between the corn and the soybeans. So they've been buying soybeans, and we can see that in the weekly numbers, as you mentioned, and I did too, July, which is the new lead option. So it took over from the May, but it was up 42.5 from last Friday's May settlement price in the corn. Same thing, May went off the board. So we go from May to July on the lead option, and it was down 10.25. What is it about the marketplace that has them doing this spread?
I think the biggest thing goes back to what we talked about on Commodity Week last week. There's no real conviction that the corn needs to go higher. I guess we've gotten to the point with the world stocks and how dire we are for this year's supply to alleviate this super, super tight supply and demand ratio, the stocks to use ratio issue, is that 350 D's corn futures is kind of like $50 barrel crude oil. It's almost a no-brainer, or it's close to being a no-brainer in terms of why you wouldn't get some length on there. And it's funny, I talked to a commercial grain trader in the corn pits earlier this week, and we were conversing back and forth, and he said, well, I'd buy corn outright, sure, and wouldn't spread it off in the beans if it were 40 cents cheaper. And I thought to myself, how interesting that is, given the supply and demand, you know, fundamentals, and given how we're looking at such another big jump in the next 2 years of potential ethanol demand. These guys, I think, bottom line, Todd, are just tired of buying corn, and they're kind of getting like they were in 95, 96, where they're almost ignoring some of these issues because this is such an, quote-unquote, old bull market in corn, whereas the beans is still relatively new. So I think the outcome, if we keep missing rains and we start seeing some crop condition reports by the USDA in the next few weeks start to show a trend of declining good to excellent conditions, is these guys will feel trapped just like they were in 95, 96 by being short corn. So that's kind of how we're setting up here.
You know, I've got to ask you, because over the last month we've heard sub-$3 corn cash prices mentioned on the air several times, and I just have a tough time looking out at the supply and demand figures and believing that that can be a possibility. Where do you stand on this issue, given a normal growing season?
Yeah, exactly right. Given a normal growing season and no real problems, and say we keep USDA's numbers that we just got, if you still have a weak dollar and tame interest rates and you still have energy prices that are strong and you don't have any of the government import barriers being lifted or anything like that when it comes to the ethanol or biodiesel, and all the numbers stay the same from USDA, I guess our mindset is, sure, you can go down as you go into harvest, but do you really need to go below $3 December at this point? Our original undervalue for the fall was around 270 December futures. After this past report and the fact they brought the yield down that three bushels or almost three bushels, we would probably take that up to around 295 or $3 December futures, and we'd say that especially from a standpoint of that cash market, that Gulf cash market, we think is going to be extremely strong all year long, even as we go into harvest. So we're on the side that, yeah, there's sure a break to come, but I guess we're also on the side that you haven't really found your highs yet, because the respect in the market really isn't there right now, and a lot of the negative people would come back immediately at me saying that and say, look, you've already gotten your big run-up. You got that last year. We've doubled the price of corn almost. We've done that for you. I guess it goes back to the issue that you've got no room to maneuver and no room for error now, and corn and beans are once again going to fight each other for acres again next year. So do you really need to let that market slip that much at harvest time, or do you need to keep building upon that price so that you assure 08 acres?
I suppose you're talking, and we should be clear about this, that you're talking about using the yield that USDA did. Then, generally speaking, when we talk about those sub-$3 levels on the cash side, it's usually normal growing season and a trend line yield, which is above what USDA's numbers are looking at.
I mean, I think we're still in a situation, and this goes back to not keeping all things equal, like you asked me, but this goes back to a situation where as we buy into USDA's yield numbers that they gave us last week, we'd also say that you haven't factored in what's happened in the southeastern areas of drought, and you haven't factored into what's happened in the Missouri-Kansas areas of flooding when it comes to either acreage or potential yield loss because they've switched from corn to beans or some other commodity. So the Informa numbers, quite frankly, really surprised us, because all of our people in the southeast from Memphis on south are saying, we had to switch. We're not growing corn in these kind of conditions.
We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Hey, Todd, have a great weekend, sir.
Hey, you too, man. Mike Zuzulo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon. At the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the state by the state climatologist, Jim Angel is his name. Our own Ed Kieser says tonight across the two-state region, class skies will be clear. Lows will range from 40 in eastern Indiana to around 50 in northwestern Illinois. And tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, highs from 72 in eastern Indiana to 84 in northwestern Illinois.
In agricultural news, a rift is growing among House and Senate lawmakers over conservation funding. The House plans to cap and reduce spending on some conservation programs. That has upset Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin, who was primarily responsible for creation of the CSP in the 2002 Farm Bill. The House Ag Committee is considering removing $1.1 billion from the CSP over the next 5 years and stopping new enrollments until 2012. House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says the CSP is too complicated and its priorities are not set up correctly. An Iowa State University study says increased corn prices from ethanol production have increased retail food prices by about $14 billion, or slightly less than 3% nationally. The report projected that at oil prices of $65 to $70 a barrel, corn prices would rise to an average of $4.42 a bushel. ISU Center for Agricultural and Rural Development Director Bruce Babcock.
Basically, we found that when you price corn off of crude oil, that large changes happen to agriculture, and your immediate effect is that you get much higher corn prices. That translates into higher feed grain prices. It translates into higher livestock prices and lower livestock production, and eventually higher food costs.
American Meat Institute President J. Patrick Boyle says a report should serve as a wake-up call to lawmakers.
We recognize the importance of the United States diversifying its energy sources to enhance energy security. But this study clearly shows that we are reaching a tipping point and that over-reliance on corn-based ethanol to meet stringent government mandates would further drive up retail food prices, reduce domestic meat and poultry production, and erode our vital meat and grain export markets.
The report also says that CRP ground is not a panacea for higher corn prices. The report says taking 11 million acres out of the CRP would potentially add just 2% to corn supplies and reduce corn prices by about 7 cents a bushel. Legislation designed to prevent large integrated oil companies from exploiting a federal tax incentive designed to stimulate biodiesel and renewable diesel production has been introduced in the House. The Responsible Renewable Energy Tax Credit Act of 2007 would prevent oil companies from claiming a $1 per gallon tax credit when using small amounts of vegetable oil or animal fats as an ingredient in making diesel fuel. Joe Joby is CEO of the National Biodiesel Board. He says the loophole should not be a cash cow for oil companies.
Although this may result in some small amount of crude oil displacement, it does not require investment in new refinery capacity or result in more fuel to the fuel supply, and therefore has limited energy security benefits. This new policy was not intended by Congress and was a widening in the tax code, does not have proven environmental, agricultural, or economic benefits.
The bill has 50 co-sponsors. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Our guest this weekend, by the way, on Commodity Week is Bill Biederman. We'll record that at 4:30 Central Time this afternoon. You can pick it up after 6 o'clock p.m. Central this evening, Friday evening, on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org, willag.org. Well, up next, the black cutworm is active in Illinois cornfields. Bean leaf beetles will soon be in the first soybean fields planted this season. And just what does IPM mean anyway? Black cutworm are at work in Illinois corn. Extension entomologist Kevin Steffi writes about the black cutworm in this week's edition of The Bulletin. You can read it online at www.ipm.uiuc.edu/bulletin. And he says most black cutworm infestations have been in no-till and strip-till fields, or fields with considerable weed coverage, i.e. chickweed, before planting. However, there are some exceptions, and he says all fields of corn need to be scouted right now, regardless of the condition of the fields before planting. According to the degree day calculator available online, too, the black cutworm damage currently being observed and addressed in Illinois could easily be the result of eggs laid during the latter half of April. The first evidence of cutting activity by black cutworms can be predicted by accumulating degree days, base 50, after the first significant moth flights. Well, bean leaf beetle activity. Now we go from corn to beans. Excellent conditions over the past 2 to 3 weeks in most areas of Illinois. Allowed a lot of growers to finish planting corn and turn their attention to planting soybean. The acres of soybeans planted are well ahead of the 5-year average for mid-May, and soybeans are emerging throughout the state. Emerging soybeans will be attractive to bean leaf beetles, says Kevin Steffi. Overwintered bean leaf beetles usually show up first in the earliest planted soybean fields, where they feed on cotyledons, unifoliate leaves, and the early trifoliate leaves. However, with so many fields of soybeans available for their feeding pleasure, populations of bean leaf beetles may be diluted among the acres, resulting in reduced levels of feeding injury in lots of fields. That's good news, he says, because the soybeans are pretty tolerant of early season insect feeding. Still, static thresholds for bean leaf beetles in the spring are 16 per foot of row in the early seedling stage, or 39 per foot of row at stage V2 and above. And finally today, putting more on is not IPM. This is a significant story penned by Mike Gray and signed off on by Kevin Steffi. Both are University of Illinois Extension entomologists. You'll need to read it for yourself. Again, that can be done at www.ipm.uiuc.edu/bulletin. It is titled, Maximizing Crop Production Inputs Does Not Equate to Integrated Pest Management, and it relates to BT corn, stacked hybrids, seed treatments, refuge areas, and the honeybee colony collapse disorder. If you're a farmer or a landowner, you simply need to read this article. It is on the University of Illinois IPM website. Look for the bulletin. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.
It's a Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL Urbana, AM 580. We're joined to take a look at the cash grain market by Ed Shirey of the Andersons in Dunkirk, Indiana. Hi, Ed.
Todd, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. What's business up there in, I guess, Dunkirk, is it?
Yeah, Dunkirk, Indiana. Well, markets, of course, everybody saw on the board, cash corn down a couple here today. We've got a bid of 13 under at 358. New crop corn down 4 to finish the day at 332. Big progress over the weekend. Corn planting and expected good conditions on Monday pressured this corn market. On the soybeans, we're unchanged across the board. Cash beans are 757. New crop beans are at 783.
And the farmers are in the fields finishing up corn.
Yeah, here in this area, we're pretty well done with corn. We'll have beans whipped after the 2 to 3 days here this weekend. So. Pretty good progress, yes.
And from Dunkirk, what's the primary areas that you're heading to processors?
South towards Indianapolis with the soybeans, and south towards, most of the corn will be used, most of that's going to be go to the southeast, most likely.
And how large of an elevator are you?
5 million.
5 million. So you're drawing from how large an area then?
40-mile radius, 40 to 50-mile radius.
And your expectations for basis to continue to narrow up as we go through the next
week? Interesting enough, on the soybean basis has been sluggish nearby. Would anticipate maybe we see a pop there, maybe to just stimulate some movement. Corn basis has improved slowly over the last 2 to 3 weeks, most of that due to lack of movement from the country.
Ed, we sure appreciate you being with us.
Todd, thank you.
Yeah, Ed Shirey is with the Andersons in Dunkirk, Indiana. He's filling in this afternoon for Bruce Bostard up at Ludlow, who's not available for the day. In just about 2 minutes, we'll talk with Jim Angel. He's the state climatologist, about what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Bloomington minister James C. Love clutched a Bible today as he pleaded not guilty. The charge is that he sedated and sexually abused 4 boys during sleepovers at his home. Love is a minister at Mount Pisgah Baptist Church. The church's pastor says Love remains on staff, and he's more concerned about the pain the case has caused than Love's status. Love is being held in McLean County Jail in lieu of $400,000 bond. A status hearing is scheduled for June 22nd. The owner of the Danville Demolition Arena football team says he had to fire several players in the coaching staff because of poor performance and because of threats made by some players to the director of their league, the American Indoor Football Association. John Christner says an accounting problem that caused some players' paychecks to bounce has been fixed, and all players have been paid. Christner says his goal now is to prove that the 1-9 Demolition can be competitive for the rest of this season and beyond. The Danville team will play its final two season games with new players who were originally cut from the practice squad. Purdue University trustees have unanimously approved tuition increases for the next two school years. Tuition at the West Lafayette campus will increase 4.5% in each of the next two academic years. Indiana residents will pay over $7,400 in the next academic year. The Illinois Senate passed legislation the day that would tighten state rules to people who are mentally ill. Under the bill, state officials who decide whether someone is eligible to buy a gun would be informed if an applicant has been declared dangerous and has gotten outpatient treatment. Current background checks in Illinois reject people declared dangerous who have been committed to mental institutions, but not those who received outpatient treatment. The bill now goes to the House. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL Urbana. We're joined now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest by state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Champaign County, Jim Angel. Good afternoon to you, Jim.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about growing degrees. Where do we stand on growing degree days at this point?
Yeah, if you look at the 50-degree growing degree day units since April 1, we're running about 100 units ahead of schedule, which is about 20 or 30% of above normal. So, you know, days like we had earlier this month, you really pile on the degree days each day.
And in general, that means that crops jump out of the ground pretty quickly, and so do insect pests.
That's right, yeah. It's good news, bad news thing. Everybody gets going a little quicker there.
Tell me about the weekend forecast.
Yeah, the weekend forecast looks pretty nice. We've got actually temperatures are pretty close to normal. Lows, I think, tonight are going to be about 45, and then high tomorrow around 71, and 79 on Sunday, and then warming up in the low 80s next week. And that's right at or just a little bit above the long-term average for this time of year.
And then if you go back and take a look from your climatologist background at this past spring, how does it stack up?
Well, if you look at things in general, April was on the cool and wet side. But in the last couple of weeks, things have really warmed up. We're running about 6-7 degrees above average for May so far. And we've also had about half of our normal May rainfall. In some places, it's been even drier. So in the short term, it's actually good news because after kind of a slow start to the growing season, now we're quickly catching up. Now we just need some timely rains to keep things going.
And what's the likelihood that those will come over the next several weeks?
Well, there is a chance of thunderstorms over the weekend, and there's another system kind of like what we had midweek this last week. It's going to roll in about Wednesday or Thursday, and that brings us our next chance of significant rainfall. You go out past that in the forecast for the Memorial Day weekend and that part of the calendar, they're looking at temperatures on the cool side, cooler than normal, and drier than normal as well. So it's going to be fairly mild. May will probably finish out on a little on the dry side would be my expectation.
Jim, we appreciate you filling in this afternoon.
All right, great.
Thanks much. Jim Angel is state climatologist here at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign County, filling in for our regular weather analyst on Friday afternoon, Steve Hilberg, away today. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to tune in tomorrow morning at 11:30 a.m. for Commodity Week. Our guest will be Allendale's Bill Biederman. If you can't wait, you can always pick it up off our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. You have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.